Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich with Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. First on the docket, Letitia Stauch. Her attorneys are coming out swinging. Second, a pastor in Louisiana is making some poor decisions. Third, another state of Kentucky representative gets arrested. Fourth, a real bad situation in Minnesota. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and thank you for tuning in to Crime Talk. If you have not already done so, we would ask that you please subscribe. If you have done that, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put out new content. And as always, leave me a comment below as to what you think about what we discussed here today. First on the docket, Letitia Stauch. You know her. She's the one charged with the death of Gannon Stauch, the young man. She was the stepmother of Gannon Stauch. He went missing. She was kind of the prime suspect, clearly became the suspect early on once we were able to review the affidavits. If you'd like to see the video of where we go through the affidavit, I'm sure we can put a link to that as well. Needless to say, she goes back to South Carolina. She gets indicted. They bring her back. They extradite her back here to Colorado. In the meantime, she has a little scuffle, attempted escape, allegedly, in the state of Kansas. And she's back here facing murder charges related to young Gannon. The affidavit is very thorough, but it still does not explain how young Gannon's body allegedly wound up in Florida, which was ultimately recovered by a construction road crew, near a bridge down in Florida. That has yet to be answered. Well, her preliminary hearings have now been set out until mid-June, and they'll also have at the same time what they refer to as a proof evident presumption great. That is a hearing to see if she will be held without bond. If the judge finds that the proof is not evident and the presumption great that she was involved in this case and basically the prime suspect, then the judge would have to set a bond, and the judge would more than likely set a bond so high she still wouldn't be able to make it. But needless to say, we'll have to wait and see. So what we want to talk about here on the docket today is that the public defenders that are representing Letitia Stauch are coming out swinging, all right? One of the first things the court did in this particular case was to issue pretrial publicity orders, all right? And the court can, in limited circumstances, limit the parties of a particular case as to what they say. And that applies to everybody that is associated with the case. So, for example, the police fall under the prosecutor, so the prosecutor would get the order, and they'd have to tell the police, you cannot make comments about this particular case. Same thing would go with the public defender, any experts or investigators that they have working on the case, or if it was a private attorney or a court-appointed attorney, if there was a conflict with the public defender's office, they would be limited as to what could be said about the particular case. Well, as we all know, this case has been covered in the news media. The attorneys for Letitia Stauch, for lack of a better term, came out swinging, saying that there has been information that's been released, made disseminated to the press, and that somebody must have violated this gag order that was put in place by the court, and they refer to it as Order-1. Now, the attorneys for Letitia Stauch are very vague, and the court references that in their order. Specifically, and I'll read it to you because I think it just makes much more sense. It says, according to paragraph 2 of the motion, Ms. Stauch requests an investigation into a statement made by an individual regarding an alleged crime committed by Ms. Stauch in Kansas. This court has no jurisdiction over that crime. So they're asking for the court to investigate somebody in Kansas who may have made a statement to the press regarding this. And the court correctly notes, I have no investigative authority or no jurisdiction over anyone in the state of Kansas. He can't order anyone to do anything in Kansas whatsoever, nor would he necessarily have that gag order would apply to them because his orders only apply to the people in this particular state and the people subject to his jurisdiction, i.e. the people in the state of Colorado. Then it goes on, it says, according to paragraph 4 of the motion, Ms. Stauch references a, quote, source as reporting that Gannon Stauch's body was found in a suitcase under an overpass. Counsel then asserts its conclusory fashion that the source of this information had to be one of the listed agencies or parties prohibited from discussing the case pursuant to 01, referring to Order 1. Significantly, there is not yet any evidence in the record regarding the cause of death of Gannon Stauch or how his body was found. As such, it is not even clear whether the facts related are accurate, whether they were made by someone with firsthand information, or even law enforcement at all. The news story referenced in the motion starts out by stating that the details were first reported in a newspaper overseas. The motion does not identify what newspaper that would have been or the substance of the story. There is also no indication in the motion regarding when law enforcement in Florida learned that the body found was that of Gannon Stauch or when Florida law enforcement authorities would have become aware of court's 01-dash order. The court simply declines to take further action at this time based upon the conclusory and speculative argument of defense counsel. If counsel has further facts to share in the form of an affidavit regarding such, the court may consider this matter once such facts are produced. And there was another paragraph regarding basically an original affidavit and then a redacted affidavit, and the court is dismissive of that because it says, we would have released the affidavit anyway, so what does it really matter? But listen, the defense in this case tried to come out swinging, okay? And if there's one thing I've learned in 25 years of practicing law, because when you're young, you're eager, you want to go out there, you're fighting for justice, you're doing everything you can, sometimes you get a little overzealous. And you learn over the years, listen, if you're going to go accusing somebody of misconduct, you better have all your facts, your affidavits, your investigators' reports ready, willing, and able to go. Because if you don't, they're going to get shot down, as the court describes them as conclusory and speculative arguments of defense counsel. That's basically saying, nice try, but you have no evidence here whatsoever. Don't come back again unless you've got some real evidence of it. And what that does is, it, as an attorney, it reduces your credibility. When you file a motion, yes, you file the boilerplate motions to preserve things. Everybody does it. But if you have a real motion of real substance, you want the judge to sit down and actually read it. And if you are filing frivolous motions with no facts and no law on your side, the judge is going to say it's speculative and conclusory, which basically saying, why are you wasting my time? Okay? And that loses credibility, because if you're firing all those motions off, they don't even look at them anymore. All right? Yeah, you fire your normal ones to do it. But if you do something like that, you better be ready to go. It's the old classic thing. If you're going to kill the king, you got one shot. You better do it. You better do it well, because they're going to come get you. And here, they've already taken a swipe now at the prosecutor and the prosecutor's team, saying that somewhere someone leaked something. That doesn't get things off to a good start. You hold your powder dry until you're ready to go. Letitia Stauch's attorneys came out swinging, and it was a big miss. They didn't hit it out of the park at all. Big, big miss. Next on the docket, there's a pastor in Louisiana making some real poor decisions. Now, this pastor came to light because apparently he has a big mega church, and his name is Tony Spell. And he really gained some notoriety because he was not going to shut down his church in light of the COVID-19 shutdowns and distancing rules and what have you. And he also wanted people to spend their COVID-19 checks coming from the government, give it to him, to his church. Well, now this pastor has really done it. Apparently, there's a warrant for Pastor Spell's arrest, and he's wanted on charges of aggravated assault relating to a bus incident which took place on Sunday. Now, according to the police, Bell was driving a bus and backed it up on the shoulder of the road, stopping the vehicle within a foot of the protester. There apparently is also another parishioner in this big church that is also charged with swerving towards protesters. You can't do that, ladies and gentlemen. Just like everybody wants to be able to protest freedom of assembly, you got to let other people do it too. That's the beautiful thing about America. The first, you got to let other people protest the stuff that you don't disagree with. That's what makes America great. The government wasn't trying to shut him down, and you certainly can't try to back over people as well. So the police, prior to issuing a warrant, actually reviewed the video taken by a television station and determined that, in fact, a crime had been committed. Now, this pastor Spell, not to be outdone, says, of course, well, these people verbally assaulted him, his wife, and his young girls. Apparently, they were making some inappropriate gestures, grabbing various parts of their body and extending their middle fingers, so to speak. And he states in a text message, what would you do with a man like that? Well, I would tell you, Pastor, don't try to run them over, okay? First, if you try to go after someone, whether you're in your vehicle or you have a deadly weapon, which a vehicle could be a deadly weapon, we've talked about this before, you're committing a crime. It's an attempted aggravated assault, all right? And you can't do that. And you can't say that you were acting in self-defense when somebody used mean words or gestures towards you, unless they were coming to attack you. Only then can you use self-defense. And self-defense in most states is that you have to have a reasonable belief that your life or that of another person was in threat of death or serious bodily injury at that moment. Words are not enough, all right? And as I tell clients all the time, just like a firearm, a vehicle complicates things. You have to be able to tell a jury and explain to a jury, you've tried all other means to resolve and minimize this situation. Even though that's not what the law is, that's the way the jurors are going to look at it. What steps could you have taken to defuse the situation? You could have driven away. You could have rolled your window up, called the police. All those things could have been done until you act like you're going to run somebody over with your car. So although this pastor Spell is given the presumption of innocence, like everyone that appears, that we discuss on this particular program, they're all given the presumption of innocence until and if they are convicted in a court of law. And if there's anyone that will afford someone the presumption of innocence, it's this guy, all right? 25 years as a criminal defense attorney, everyone deserves the presumption of innocence. Next on the docket, more Kentucky state representatives gone wild. As you may recall, yesterday we talked about a state representative in Kentucky, Derek J. Lewis, was arrested on DUI charges and tried to use his position as a state representative to get out of it by just calling the sheriff, so to speak. Yeah, you can't do that. Well, guess what? There's another state representative, Robert Goforth. He was arrested by the Laurel County Sheriff's Office in his hometown of East Bernstadt, and he was being booked on the charges of strangulation, fourth-degree assault, and terroristic threats. He's being held on a $25,000 cash bond, and it's not exactly clear as to what happened as to the factual basis that got the good state representative arrested. Now, this state representative is apparently the one that ran against Governor Matt Bevins and received 40% of the vote against the incumbent. Ultimately, Bevins lost, and now Goforth obviously didn't win either. But apparently, you know, it looks like the people may have made the correct decisions. Obviously, he's given the presumption of innocence. We'll have to wait and see, but that's two Kentucky state representatives in 2 days. maybe those stay-at-home policies aren't working out. Everyone needs to put the Kentucky bourbon down and just relax for a little while. Let it go. Everybody just let it go. Take a deep breath. Let it go. Think about it. Is it really worth going to jail for? Ask yourself that. Probably not. Next on the docket, another weird case out of the state of Minnesota. There's a gentleman by the name of Ethan Broad. He's a 27-year-old man, and he is being charged with the missing or the disappearance of Destiny Avery. Apparently, Miss Avery was a friend of Mr. Broad, and she had been staying there for a while, and she had done this in the past. Apparently, her mother didn't think much about it, but she became somewhat concerned when she hadn't heard from Ms. Broad in several days. So as it turns out, when the police start investigating and speaking with Mr. Broad, he first makes a couple of statements. Now, obviously, people, if you're going to talk to the police, you have really two options. One, keep your mouth shut. Or two, you tell the absolute truth, all right? And the absolute truth is always a good thing if that's what it was. Now, if it's not going to really help you out on the defense side, you may want to keep your mouth shut. But if you're going to tell the truth, just get it out there. Don't lie. It just reduces your whole credibility. So when you actually say something, people want to believe you. All right. It's kind of like filing motions that we talked about originally at the top of the show. You don't file something. You don't say something unless it's actually valid. So reportedly, Mr. Broad testified that the that he hadn't seen Miss Avery since the 4th when she took her stuff and left the apartment. He then changed his story as the interview progressed, stating that he alleged that Miss Avery was deceased and that he then dismembered her body before throwing it in the dumpster in the apartment building. He claimed that someone else had killed her, beaten her on the head with a lead pipe, and then allegedly cut her throat. Broad allegedly asserted that other people moved Miss Avery's body to the garbage to get rid of it, but authorities said that the surveillance footage shows him by himself bringing blue storage totes to the garage. Mr. Broad then allegedly changed his story yet again, now saying the fact that he was the person who actually killed Miss Avery, but then asserted that it was in fact in self-defense. Apparently, the police have spoken to a couple of Mr. Broad's friends, and they stated that he admitted to the murder and dismemberment to both of them. The search of the apartment revealed a saw that seemed to have blood as well as human tissues on it. Blue storage bins that had blood and spots in the apartment apparently had been cleaned to get rid of blood. So, Mr. Broad here obviously has big problems. He's made admissions to his friends, and obviously we're giving him the presumption of innocence. And then he's made all these statements that, well, I didn't do it. But then I did do it, but I only dismembered her. Somebody else did it, and I was just had to take part of that. Not a good story. And then third, well, yeah, I did do it, and then I did dismember her, but it was in self-defense. Not good start here for Mr. Broad's defense, to say the least. Seems like the prosecutors have got this gentleman right where they want him, so to speak. Obviously, it's a tragedy. Miss Avery, as her mother stated, she thought that Mr. Broad was, in fact, a good friend and could not believe that he would do such a thing. They have started a GoFundMe for Destiny's, Miss Destiny Avery's family to help with funeral expenses. And you, to help you out, the it's the Destiny, it's not the common spelling, D-Y-S-T-Y-N-E-E is the spelling if you look for that on GoFundMe. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, I have to admit, this is a somewhat older story of our dumb criminal contestant of the day. It took place prior to the COVID-19 stay-at-home orders. And this case took place in the south side of Chicago. Now, the suspect in this particular case, and obviously he's given the presumption of innocence, was Terrion Pouncey. He was then 19 years of age. And apparently he approached a hot dog stand and demanded cash. While he went to adjust his .38 pistol that he had brought along, he managed to shoot himself twice, once in his penis and once in the leg. Now, Mr. Pouncey faced two counts of robbery for taking items from the two employees at the hot dog stand. These included a cell phone and the wallet, and he did also manage to steal some cash from the business as well. What really gets good are the specific facts of the alleged robbery. Apparently, the two employees were there when Mr. Pouncey came up and put a pistol to one of the men's head. The one employee was holding a grease bucket at the time when he was attacked. He asked the other employee to get the cash from the register to give to Pouncey. As the two men handed over the cash and their wallets, the grease bucket allegedly went flying. Pouncey stuck the money and the gun in his waistband. Then he began to flee. As he did, he immediately slipped in the grease. While he was holding his firearm, it discharged because he obviously pulled the trigger, shooting him in the penis and the leg. He ran for a few blocks before he actually called the police and stated that he, in fact, had been shot. He was ultimately arrested at the hospital, and surveillance footage showed him on video making the robbery and that his boxers matched the boxers that were found at the hospital, you know, because apparently he was sagging. Another way of identification, people, is items of clothing. It's not just one's face, but articles of clothing that are found on you. So Mr. Pouncey was identified by his boxer shorts and, well, the fact that he was shot and video. So it just goes from there. But Mr. Pouncey, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. I'm not sure winning the dumb criminal contestant of the week could top shooting yourself in the penis and the leg. But hey, give us a call. Maybe we'll interview you. You can get a Crime Talk mug for your kind of your victory dance. What more could a criminal ask for? Hey, thanks for watching. As always, we appreciate you taking the time. We know there's lots of things that you could be doing. So the fact that you take the time to watch us on this channel is very humbling. We do not take it for granted. I assure you of that. Have a great day. Wash your hands, use your common sense, and stay healthy. Have a great day.